Hey guys, I'm Mark Potter, and this is another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast brought to you by Canvas Magazine. Guys, today's episode is a little different take than our normal course of action. Rather than interview some expert slash author slash guru, I thought it would be fun to share a conversation that we have internally. Specifically, I would like to share with you a conversation that I had with Brandon Clark, our creative director, and Alyssa Ruane, who is a writer for us. And the reason that that's potentially interesting to all of you is that Alyssa is a 20-something, Brandon is a 30-something, and I, unfortunately, am a 40-something. But that gives us the chance to share some unique perspectives, certainly from an age perspective. And we all come at it from different avenues. You know, Alyssa is a writer, Brandon is a creator, designer, I'm kind of a thinker slash consultant, and we just have a lot of fun internally with our conversations. And every once in a while, we think to ourselves, you know, that was a podcast. That conversation was a podcast. So we're going to take a shot at sharing some of this with you. And because we do, there are times when we have a lot of really compelling conversations, and they can go on for a long time. But sometimes that's where insight comes from. It's the conversation. It's the back and forth. That's why publishing is so important these days. It's why we do what we do, is because it's not just, hey, we're going to put something out. We're not going to promote or publish our content and whoever listens. Part of that process is actually hearing people and digesting what they have to say. So I really thought it was fun, and I hope you guys enjoy it. And if it does work, then we'll probably inject these every once in a while. And before we get to the conversation, let me remind you that Brushstrokes is brought to you today by Conduit Incorporated. If you visit www.conduit-inc.com, you'll find that Conduit can meet all of your custom content needs. So, without further ado, let me share with you a conversation I had with my working partners and good friends, Brandon and Alyssa. Enjoy. Okay, so listen, I already recorded a little intro, and I told the readers, listeners, that this was going to be a little bit different than what I normally do. You know, obviously, what I've done with podcasts is, you know, I've interviewed experts and authors, and we have conversations about the world. And, you know, the funny thing is that as we've talked, and you know, probably most specifically Brandon and I over the years, we've had countless conversations that we looked at each other and thought, you know, that could have been a podcast. And so I was just curious. I you know, I was thinking the other day, I thought, you know, it'd be really interesting to spend some time with Alyssa and Brandon in a more formal, not so formal setting, talking a little bit about the world and, you know, what the trends are and how people buy, because things have changed a lot over the course of my career, and I've seen kind of the movement from this industrial age to this new kind of connection age, where people have to continually reinvent themselves, and the way we connect is different. And yet the two of you have kind of grown up with that. And I thought it was interesting because, you know, Alyssa's a 20-something and Brandon's a 30-something, and I'm a 40-something, you know, getting up there. And but I thought, you know, it'd be interesting to kind of get perspective, and even Brandon in just 10 years has probably seen dramatic changes. So and who knows, maybe this can be conversations from from Conduit over the course of time, but I'll start this by saying the publishing process is not a trumpet. It is not, hey, let me just go out and write a story from my mind and send it out there. It's like the tree falling in the woods and it doesn't make a sound. You know, really not if anybody's not there to hear it. And my thought is that the publishing process is coming into vogue or because it's a process. It's a process of actually connecting with others and interviewing people and listening and digging out stories and entertaining. So to me, that's kind of where we're at. And I think that's the same thing here is that, you know, it's important for us to kind of listen to the different generations. And, you know, I'll start it by saying, you know, Brandon and I were talking earlier about the fact that there is this, it's almost getting ridiculous that there's such a focus on millennials. There's a conversation or article written all the time, and it's kind of like, okay, I mean, we've beat that to hell. And so now we're going to go towards Generation Z and the whole deal. And I'm thinking, you know, maybe this is a bigger deal. So I'll ask you both, first and foremost, because you're both essentially in Gen X. Or no, I'm sorry, you're both in millennials. I'm Gen X. But does it drive you nuts? Does it drive you nuts,
Cyrano? I mean, it definitely, seeing so many articles written about, you know, my generation that are written by people who are not in my generation is very frustrating. Mm-hmm. Because of course they're you know grouping us all into this one generalization, and then you know we don't get a chance to even kind of tell our side, and people are just assuming all these things about us. But yeah, I find it extremely frustrating.
Yeah, because I feel like I don't. It's almost like the consumerist nature of our world makes us. It conditions us to look at the next shiny thing. So whether that was QR codes or social marketing or, you know, the latest DVR or the next narrative, right? So this narrative of, oh, well, the millennial generation, how to deal with millennials, how to market to millennials, millennials do this, millennials are that. And I think to myself, is this the important stuff? Or are we just like lemmings chasing the next shiny thing? And so my point would be, I don't think people define themselves that way. I don't wake up and go, well, you know, I'm Gen X. You know, there are people in this world that might get up in the morning and go, you know, I've got to deal with the color of my skin. And you know, that's an issue that comes up every day. Or I have to deal with my religious beliefs. People don't get up and go, well, I got to deal with this whole millennial thing again today. I mean, right? Yeah.
Like we caught it on the way in.
That's right.
We caught being a millennial. There was an article 2 weeks ago about how it was in Business Insider, and the title was something like, how millennials are killing off brands like Buffalo Wild Wings. And then there was like a wave of all these sarcastic articles from millennials on the internet, like, oh, we're sorry we killed your crappy brand. And that's why I said earlier, I think that it's kind of reached this interesting point where first it was, what are millennials? And it was all mysterious. And it was like, here's how to spot a millennial. And they're drinking PBR and they have their, you know, their knit cap on. And then it was, look how sad the millennials are. They're in their parents' basement. And now it's, look out for the millennials. They're killing your business. Right. So.
I mean, it's gotta be. And then like Alyssa said, people are, who aren't millennials are writing about them like they're this creature that we have to kind of understand. It's almost like finding this long lost underwater creature or something.
And they never really go to the, you know, they don't go through the trouble to actually interview us in these articles they're writing about us. They're just, like, going with whatever data they found that they can, like, you know, throw us into this pinhole. It's, I don't know. I think, in general, our society is very ageist. And so I think any, you know, younger generation is going to be, you know, it's going to annoy the older generations because, you know, that comes with technology and things, and they don't want to be pushed out.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that's, there are so many variables at play, and, you know, I want to get your perspectives on that, because I think it's not just generation, although that, I think that age segregation is a big deal. It is because we're conditioning ourselves to kind of sit with the people that are in our age group, you know, whether we're going to church or in business or socially. And, you know, if you're a 16-year-old, you can't be a friends with a 21-year-old. And that doesn't make any sense. And I think it goes to a point where you don't get shared perspectives. And I think that's a beautiful thing, right? Seeking the perspectives of older people or younger people, that's important. And maybe getting away from this age-specific thing is I don't know. It's kind of like, you know, we got to swim upstream. Let everybody else talk about this whole generational thing. I think it's gotten played. So my concern is more about, you know, what you guys think, how we as a culture are performing. You know, speak to things like, what are the ambitions, you, your peers, what do you aspire to? What are the things that you think about? What keeps you up at night? Have those changed from you know, when I was your age? And how has work changed, do you think, over the years?
Should I take this one, or?
Well, you can. Go ahead.
Well, somebody better.
I was ladies first. But I graduated from college, which was almost 10 years ago now, next year will be 10 years ago, one of the first things I read, it was kind of a collection of stories about people in the freelance design industry. And one of the, I guess, the intros was all about how my generation had for years been told, hey, you need to go to college, you need to go to college, you need to go to college. And then once those people got out and they finished college, they had no other aspirations, because the whole, you know, it was, hey, you can do whatever you want and you go to college. And so when people got out and they were like, well, I can actually do whatever I want, they were a little aimless. They were a little, there were no goals left to achieve, kind of. So I think that a lot of the stuff that is published sometimes hits the nail on the head with, I think a lot of people my age are concerned with things other than working. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In good ways and bad ways. I told Mark earlier, I think that a lot of this stuff is going to come full circle, because our generation is good at looking inward and trying to find things that matter. But in doing so, sometimes they avoid the actual work part of it. You know, it's almost like freeing up your schedule so you have time to do something that you're eventually going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, I think especially, so I graduated college 2014, so like 3 years. And, you know, what I've kind of noticed is with, you know, people, I mean, I still have friends that are, you know, just graduating now, and a lot of people are taking their sweet time trying to find jobs. And it's definitely, I think, because, at least in my case, you know, I saw my parents, you know, work. They didn't get college degrees. My dad owns a construction company. My mom worked for the same bank. She was like 18 as a bank teller. And then 50 years later, 40 years later, they let my mom go, like tried to force her into early retirement. And so I saw that that loyalty was not reciprocated. And, you know, you spend all your life working so hard for something that doesn't really amount to what you thought it would. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's definitely trying to find, you know, that passionate work that even if, you know, I don't make a lot of money at it, at least, you know, I'm not just working towards a paycheck or, you know, showing up and just kind of, you know, revolving my life around it when it's not a big part of my life otherwise.
Right.
Yeah. I want to make another point was that I was listening to a different podcast a couple of weeks ago, and Mike Rowe was talking about, you know, his whole spiel about going into trades and trade school and things like that. And he said something like he hesitates to tell people to find things that they're passionate about because he says once you put in the work, you end up finding that happiness and that passion, you know, once you kind of just put your head down and start working. And I think a lot of people are searching for this, like the passion up front.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've told probably both of you this, but you know, I'm reading this guy, Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse. His book is called The Vanishing Adult, and it's captivated. You know, it's been captivated me because I feel like he's a historian in just like in publishing. Anytime there's empirical evidence. You know, you're not just writing an op-ed piece. You're when you go out and talk to people or you have data or whatever, and you can frame the story that way. There's hard evidence, and I kind of like that with him. And so he came out and he said, and this is where I think there's commonality in the generations, because I'm going through it too. What he's saying is we've had four economies in the history of man. First was hunting and gathering. The second one was the agricultural age, and that was, you know, you dig a hole, plant a seed. And then the third one was the industrial age. And the separation between home and work was not great. I mean, meaning, you know, if you were a farmer, you lived and worked on the farm. And your kids at the age of 7, 8, 9 years of age, that's what they did. And there was probably no difference. It was the family business. And the industrial age was kind of the first time that there was a bit of separation there, and that newer generations could start to think, you know, I don't have to be a coal miner. I can go do something else. But what this age is, and he said, well, we really haven't named it. I've called it in the past the connection age or whatever you have. But this day and age, the thing that's interesting about it is that it's the first time where where continuous learning has to take place. A 50-year-old man, and I'm not 50 yet, has to reinvent himself. You know, there is no end game. In the industrial age, you got a job. And this goes to something Brandon was saying. You got a job, and you could have that job for 30 years. You could work for the same company for 30 years, maybe at least the same industry. And certainly our industry, in the printing industry, there's a lot of that, right? That's it. You're in and you stay there. And what that manifests itself is that there's not really continuous learning going on, at least not in-depth continuous learning. Because, and so Alyssa alluded to this earlier, is that there's people don't want things to change. Sure, they don't want things to change because it's scary. They may have to learn something new. So I look at big organizations. I look at people within an industry, and they're going, well, no, I don't want to learn those new things. I'm competent in what I'm doing. But even if it's going down, you know, it's sliding down the rabbit hole, they don't want to learn something different. So, but that's just the way it is now. Brandon knows that, you know, I did this presentation on life cycle curves, and the life cycle curves are constantly changing. So I think that it's constantly changing and constantly getting shorter. So that means that what we do today might last 3 years, and you better be on your toes and figure out where the next direction is going. You need to go. So it is a day and age of constant learning, and it does not discriminate on age, in my opinion. My concern is the commitment to that in the work ethic. Maybe sometimes I look at that and go, people don't want to keep learning, and I think, well, they're not working hard. But maybe they're in their mind, they are working hard. They're saying, yeah, I'm doing what I have always done, and I'm working really. But really, it's about, yeah, but are you creating value for others and yourself by continuing learning? That's a big, big gap, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think that there's a commonality in there somewhere where, you know, usually the articles say millennials are, they want to work someplace where the work or they matter, right?
Right.
And also you see that in the people who are once working those jobs for 30, 40 years. You know, they're connected, but they're different. You know, and it's funny that they kind of both share that same aspect. It's just a kind of a different, you know, an age gap. And also when I was telling Mark earlier about the Team of Teams book that I heard about, what they were saying was that a lot of that industrial age mindset that businesses and governments and militaries and people used to plan has gotten thrown out the window. So now you have to adapt to things sometimes on a day-to-day, hourly basis, as opposed to, you know, it's like the music industry. Somebody used to put out a single and ride it for months and months, and now it's people consume it and they're done and they want the next one.
Right. Yeah, you know, that goes to how we consume stuff. I mean, let's get to that in a second, because that that could be a podcast by itself. But going back, you know, there was something you were talking about. Okay, they go to school. They tell you to go to school, and they think, okay, you can do anything you want. Right, I go through school, I'm done, and now I can do anything I want, and I want to do whatever I want. And I'm a little concerned with that culture overall. I don't think that discriminates. I think that's not really, it's kind of like the cart before the horse. Like, I'm going to be X. And so, yeah, but what's the path to get there? Quite honestly, and accomplishing that, is, you know, you don't sit there and say, all right, well, I would like to be the head of an agency. Okay, well, guess what? First and foremost, you're probably going to need some clients, and you're going to have to actually go out and develop relationships with them and the whole thing. So you're going to have to go through some of that. I think I don't think that is a millennial thing. I think that's a cultural thing right now, that we can do anything we want, and I feel like we're put on this earth to produce. Alyssa was saying something earlier about, and I think about it, like Alyssa was on a road trip a month or two ago and we were talking about it, and I thought to myself, that gives her perspective. You know, it makes her better at what she's doing. And, right. But it doesn't mean that she doesn't have to work her head off, right? It means that she can go out there and gain perspective and be productive, but productive is a different thing. And going through that pain and making that investment, I don't know, maybe we've gotten lazy as a culture. Do you see that? Do you see that in your peers?
That people have gotten lazy?
Yeah.
I think that people confuse the laziness with kind of just like feeling lost. I think that, you know, millennials come off lazy, but really they just, you know, maybe they're in a job that is not what they expected, you know, when they were going to college for. And so they're just, kind of tuned out. And a lot of the times too, I think it's just kind of the changing nature of the workforce in general, with all the technology and just being able to, for example, like work from home. Like a lot of us, let's see, at my first job, it was a desk job and all I was doing was like emailing, and it was PR. And I thought it was going to be a lot more of like, you know, the glamour and going to do things, going to events. But I literally sat in that office all day just emailing people. So I became frustrated that, you know, I could be at home doing this. Like this is, you know, sucking my time because I can get it done. But when you force me to sit here for X amount of hours, 9 hours a day, like you're just forcing me to slow down, you know, my productivity so that I have something to do tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it just kind of depends on, you know, where people are and what they expected and, you know, where they see themselves going as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think there's always going to be lazy people. It's, I don't necessarily see millennials overall as being lazy, but what you were saying earlier, Mark, about, you know, having to adapt and maybe reinvent yourself, maybe, I was just thinking this, maybe we're more equipped as the economy and the work environment develops, you know, with the automation and the certain skill jobs going away because robots and artificial intelligence, maybe we're more suitable to being able to change quicker because we're kind of all over the place in a way. Like maybe eventually it'll be a good thing where right now it just looks like we're kind of bouncing off the walls and we're ADD and we, you know, we're using the phones. But I look at, and I think a lot of millennials would agree, is that the idea of self reinvention is kind of exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. I think that that's probably, I mean, I think that's pretty well put and insightful. And don't get me wrong, I just don't think that it's a generational thing. If anything, what I said earlier, right, that we're in a day and age for the first time that you don't get to do something. You don't get to insert yourself into an industry, a business, or whatever, and think that that's going to be there for the next 30 or 40 years. It just doesn't happen. But it did. It was that way. And when you look at generations like the boomer generation, which was the largest generation for a long time, you know, they occupied industry and business for their careers. And I'm not saying that they didn't progress, and that was just the world. So when you go into the education system and it tells you, look, you've got to go to college and then you're good to go. There is a mentality there historically. It has nothing to do with millennials, boomers. It's just the way it's progressed. We're in this day and age now that says, yeah, no, you don't get to, there's no, and the education system sucks so bad in this country that you can start to think about, I mean, it would be blasphemy to look at my son or daughter and go, yeah, I don't care if you go to college or not. I mean, that's you always did. I grew up in that world. Like, you're going to college. Oh, right. By the way, you get 4 years. Don't knock on my door if there's more than that. And that's it. And so, but today, I don't know. I know this. At some point, people have to like you, trust you, know that you're going to run through a wall for them. And that's going to have to be at the core of who you are in terms of, I just want to be productive. I will get stuff done. I mean, I was thinking about one of my clients today. One of our clients today. And I'm thinking about them and I'm thinking, God, all I want to do is be successful for them. That's all I want to do. Because I just know that, and I think that's, so Brandon and I were talking about, we were talking about depression earlier. And we had heard this video of a guy who was a best-selling author. And he was basically talking about how he's had 50 different bouts with depression, and you're sitting there going, man, I mean, that's really wild that he was, you know, he kind of got so self-absorbed, and yet he was, you know, talking about what he could do, what you should be doing for yourselves. And it was interesting to us. And he had written a book about basically working smarter as opposed to working more hours. And sure. I think it goes the other way. I think the book should be like, hey, let's write a book about working your head off. And because when you're productive and serving others, it's soul enriching. So you're right. I do think that we're in a cultural change, and the millennials, as I suppose, you know, the world has defined them, do have a remarkable opportunity to embrace that. Go ahead.
That Simon Sinek quote, where he says a lot of millennials, they step up to a mountain and all they see is the top. They don't see the journey to the peak, you know, we have a tendency to kind of say, well, I want to find my greatest love. And you're just looking at the end point. You're not looking at all the stuff in between. You know, you gain that love or that appreciation of the summit over the course of that journey. You know, so there is some short-sightedness on our end. But, and I think it harkens back to that whole, you need to go to college, where it's that message where all you're focused on is that one thing, and kind of throwing all these ancillary things on the outside to the wayside because you're trying to get to that goal. You know, because for all those years, it's get to college, get a degree. And so once you kind of achieve that, you feel like you've either achieved it, or, you know, what's the next step? If that's the only thing you've been told to do, subconsciously you're like, what's next?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that it's, when I think about, and again, I'm going to say this for the umpteenth time, I don't think it's millennials. I think it's a lot of people do that. I think it's a culture. And maybe I'm just trying to...
Like it's today's... This day and age's kind of mentality, you mean?
Yeah. I think you have so many variables that are at play right now. And it is uncomfortable because you can't say generations aren't influenced by other generations. You know, we're conditioned. We were conditioned to think about what work really was, we've been conditioned to think, okay, I got to get mine, and so we're selfish creatures. I mean, we are selfish right. creatures. But
let me ask you this question then, because you're a little older, you know, not by much, you know, you're not an old man, you know. Would, from your perspective on the outside, do you think the millennial generation, it being so large and so technology heavy and kind of all over the place, do you think we're driving that expansion with the economy and the automation and things like that? Or do you think it's just the natural progression of the industrial age moving on into something else? And we're kind of all just adapting to it? Or do you think it's our generation pushing that sort of thing?
I don't think it has anything to do with the generation. I think it's greed. I think I think it's the next thing. It's economies of scale. It is a capitalistic society, so it will any business will find the lowest common denominator. They will get there. Technology allows you to do that. It allows you to disintermediate people. It allows you to run processes more efficiently. And so that ultimately is about taking costs. So everything gets commoditized over the course of time, and technology gives you the ability to do that. And so people, the irony is that, that there's people on the other side of that that are going to take advantage of it. There are people on the other side of it that are going to say, I do it. You know, we've talked about it, right? Where we've talked about a technology that listens better. And so, and I think that's a big deal, Brandon. I think for all of us, and I think as an organization and as a team, we need to be constantly thinking about that, because, you know, if you read this guy, Ben Sass, I was telling you about, he'll tell you there's about 110 to 140 million jobs that will be impacted by 2025 by technology or artificial intelligence, and that knowledge workers will be impacted. That means that lawyers and insurance brokers and doctors, I mean, they'll be impacted by this. So what are those jobs? So now that's one big factor. Like this, the economy, capitalism is just going to keep driving you towards this, and that's why you have to adapt. And so what are the jobs? It keeps me up constantly. And you have, a son and another one on the way, and it will soon consume you as to what will their path be. And, that's why it's just not scripted out that way. Let's face it. There used to be, my dad was a farmer, I'll be a farmer. My dad was a coal miner, I'll be a coal miner. My dad went to work for Coca-Cola, and he'll get me a job and I'll go to work for Coca-Cola. That stuff doesn't happen. I'll go to college and people will come on campus and hire us and we'll get jobs. And then we'll walk in there and they'll give us a salary and benefits, and stuff doesn't happen anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, so that means we have to be more on our toes, more adept at the irony is we have to be more adept at connecting with others. And that's right. That goes back to, so we were talking about buying and you know, I think Alyssa, you've done a lot of that. I mean, I quite honestly, that's how we connected, because you know, you kind of put yourself out there. Right?
I mean, I work on the internet, so to speak. So yeah, I go to the internet for everything. I mean, it's become a total marketplace and, you know, a way to, you know, connect, so to speak, but that's how I feel most fluent, you know, unfortunately. I mean, I'm, you know, I can talk to people in real life too, but you know, like that's how I grew up. I grew up with both analog and digital, and I was like, you know, IMing people when I was, God, like 12. So I'm used to just, you know, that kind of communication. You know, I hate picking up the phone. Like, that's just kind of how I work. And I'm sure a lot of people in my generation, too. That's why everyone texts and messages and tags people in memes and whatnot.
But your relationships, and it, you've got to talk to them. I mean, you've got to.
Right. I mean, I have, like, real relationships. Yeah.
And your business is
live on the internet.
And historically, your success is a derivative of those that you are able to connect with. I mean,
right.
I would.
But that's why the internet has been so great, because it's so much easier to reach people, especially, you know, as a journalist. Like, there's so many ways to find sources now that, you know, I'm able to make those connections faster, and, you know, there's always that plus side to technology. So,
yeah, I just find it, I find it, for me, I have, my relationships today are more important than ever before, and it's harder mm-hmm. for me to get that personal time that I need. It's harder for me to get them on the phone. It's harder for me to see them. And yet, I know that that's the most critical thing, because it's part of developing trust. Sure, once you're there, mm-hmm. they need to know that I'll run through a wall for them. I'll do anything, that I'm at, you know, their beck and call. But at the same time, I still need to be able to connect with them. And yet we all have, I look at my family and the TV can be on, and all four of us can have a device in our lap. And I think to myself, man.
But you're all watching the same thing.
Yeah.
Hockey. Well, I was telling Mark earlier, Alyssa, that I thought it was very interesting that when you kind of came on board, you already kind of had an online presence on your own website, and you were publishing things kind of that you were interested in, or and those sorts of things. And I think that there's some people now that they kind of, they're like, oh, journalism, you know, it's kind of, in a way, they talk about it like it's the print industry, where they're like, oh, paper's dead and the printed word, you know, it's all digital. But it's just changed, you know. Right. So I think somebody can go to your website or your blog, and if you've conveyed it well, then people can connect and trust you that way. Hmm. It's just kind of a different, you know, way of discovering it.
Yeah, that's interesting.
How have you seen it change since maybe before you went to college up until now, with kind of publishing and posting things or writing things?
Sure. Honestly, I learned about like blogging probably in high school, but that's when it was more of like your online diary, right? And then it kind of became, I learned it became a thing when I like applied to a random freelance gig because I couldn't get a job in college, go figure. So I was like, oh, like I know how to write. I'm an English major. Maybe I can try to make money doing this on the side. And that's kind of when I realized that people were getting in on, you know, blogging for their companies, you know, content marketing, all of that stuff. But it wasn't really a thing yet. And that was like 2012. Not everyone was doing it. And Facebook wasn't like the crazy, I mean, people are like crazy on Facebook now. You know, it's just become so overwhelming. Like with all this content and people sharing all these articles, like it wasn't like that, you know. Facebook used to be, you post your status about like what you're doing that day. Like, you know, you're just telling people what's going on. So I think that as far as publishing goes, I think print will stick around, but only, you know, the valuable print entities, because they can't get people to pay. They can't get advertising. But, you know, if anything, they just literally just duplicate it onto the internet. And so I literally blogged for Charlotte Home and Garden magazine. And, you know, I like that it's still, you know, a trusted source. You know, it's actual journalism. It's not one of those click farm sites, but it's totally online for some of the stuff they do. I mean, I think it's, they just have to exist everywhere now. And even with Snapchat and everyone trying to become editorial destinations, I think that media outlets kind of have to choose their battles now.
Yeah. And so. Mark was there at the heart of the .com boom. So you know, a lot of this stuff happened when Amazon said, we want to sell books online. You know, we're cutting book publishers out of the loop. We're, you know, and it's kind of funny that I think there was a study that came out not that long ago that said millennials actually prefer reading out of printed books because they found that it's easier to remember the things you're reading if it's in print.
On paper.
Yeah, now that it's come full circle.
Yeah, you know, it's funny.
Because we're inundated with digital.
It is. It's. Right. I mean, and that's the thing. It has nothing to do. It doesn't. The platform, the vehicle for the communication, really doesn't matter. I mean, it's what matters is first and foremost, are there communities that you identify with? Do you understand them? Are you passionate about them? Are you passionate about understanding more? Are you curious about understanding more about them? And then when you get to know them, are you interested in supporting them or helping them or raising their game. And then you can start to put the stuff out. And now you say, okay, well, what are the vehicles that they connect with the most? It might be social. It might be print. Yes, I believe, you know, print is really, really impactful. I just got done sending out a bunch of cards to people with a copy of one of our magazines, and where we had done this unique cover, and for April, as you guys remember. So I said, and I wrote them, and I literally said, you know, Canvas 10 years old, and I said, print rules, or some notes said, you know, print still matters. So it does. And I think, you know, the funny thing, I was going to tell this to Brandon earlier. We were talking about something, and I'm watching a show on Netflix, and I'm digesting it now that the hockey season is over. I'm digesting it in a week, and I love that. Like, I don't have, I assume there's some people who want it to drag on, you know, they want it. Well, I want to, you know, it's almost like
I want to be immersed.
What's that?
Like, you want to be immersed in the story.
Yeah, but they also want it to last. So I don't want to use it up, you know, and they're it's almost like they're on a diet, if you will. And you know, I don't, but me, I want it done. And I think about, we used to read books. I mean, when you read books, the it was at your own pace. You digested it when you wanted it. If you wanted to sit there and get it done, if you wanted to sit by the pool and read it, or at night and read it, you did it. And the other big difference was that the characters, you envisioned them in your mind. So there was something beautiful about that, and there was something that was, I'm custom. It was personal. It was, I mean, think about that. I read a book, I consumed it at my rate of speed, at my leisure, and I even customized it further by imagining what the characters were like or looked like in my head. And so we went to technology, and then we've gone all the way full circle almost with a thing like Netflix, because they're saying, here, you have, here's the content, digest it at your leisure. Digest it when you want. When it used to be, oh God, I gotta wait till, you know, a week goes by to the next episode. And so it's pretty interesting in that, in terms of how we buy and how some things come around. You know, the question is, it's almost, I feel like we're almost going full circle to a point where, even back further, where the corner store, like you're, I was on, I don't go on Facebook a lot, but I went on there the other day, and I went back. There was a page where they had my old hometown, and it was, they said, I'm from this old hometown. They had pictures of these old buildings that are not long gone. There was a grocery store called Weiss Logels, and I'm looking at that, I'm like, I remember that. There was a day and age when the milkman brought the milk. I grew up, we still had the silver box at my house where they put the milk. And so today we think, oh, that's pretty cool. But on some level, we are going back there. Technology and all this noise is forcing us back to a more intimate place. You know, my clients, I'm not looking to scale. I'm not looking to say, I got to have 1,000 clients and let's just sell mass stuff. No, I'd rather have 10 really great clients that I would run through a wall for. So I think we're almost going back to some of that, where, you know, earlier you asked me what was pushing all this, and I don't think it's generation. I think it's greed. So
I don't know. That's kind of what we were talking about a couple of years ago with going retro with Think MSP. Mm-hmm. And I think that you hit a sweet spot by saying, you know, it's not the vehicle, it's about, and this echoes well with, I think, millennials, in that you have to help the client, you know, serve their needs, serve them, help them achieve their goals, which is, in a way, what millennials are trying to do, kind of find a purpose, or it's just that all the generations now are getting caught up in technology and social media, and you see those next big things and you forget to bring along the message. You go, well, I can reach this many customers if I'm on Twitter, but if you have no message or if you're not really helping them, then it's just kind of, you know, it's just out there. It's just noise.
Interesting stuff. You know, I like it. I think we'll do this again. I think that this is something that, you know, why not? I know Brandon and I have kicked these things around, and we've sucked the air out of the room a lot. But I think both of you, I think you do, you're creative. So you need to understand that. I mean, you need to take the perspectives of the right brain, you know, whether you're writing and meeting people and writing and exploring that, or going up and down the coast and having some experiences, and or you're writing songs and venturing out to all the places to with your band or whatever. That kind of stuff makes you better. I do believe that. I always believe that. And then I think
so. You're telling me I should go on more road trips. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no,
I will.
Yeah, no, or benders. So I thought I called it a bender. Anyways,
you did.
But I think the other part of it is you know, you combine that with a passionate curiosity, a work ethic, because that's the last thing I'll leave this with, and that is because this is the thing that concerns me with my kids is that, you know, you're going to have to do a lot of stuff in life that you don't want to do, right? And that's just the way it is. There's an old school basketball player by the name of Julius Erving, Dr. J, and he was quoted as saying, you know, superstars are working hard when no one's looking. You know, they're doing the stuff that nobody wants to do when nobody's looking. So, but I think it's that. I think grabbing that work ethic mentality and combining it with that right brain stuff that you guys have is the future. I think certainly we need sellers in that kind of respect, but we'll save that conversation for another time. We'll do this every periodically because I think it's fun. It's cathartic for me, and whether or not anybody's listening to it, you know, well, at least three of us can enjoy it.
I think that you old bulls have something to offer us after all, you know?
The old bull and the young bull sitting on a hill. That's the rated R version. We'll go into the, you know, this is PG.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
All right, guys, listen, thanks and get back to work.
Mark, is it your birthday?
It is my birthday.
Why wouldn't you mention that? Happy birthday.
Thank you. Well, because we're recording this, and by the time this goes out, it won't be my birthday anymore. And,
yeah.
And I'm getting old that I don't want to talk about birthday. I woke
up. Here's
a fun fact. You share a birthday with Kris Kristofferson, so that makes you infinitely cooler.
That's cool. Yeah, we're about the same age. All right, listen, let's get back to work.
All right, sounds good.
All right, thanks, guys. Sounds I appreciate good. It.
Thank you all.
All right, bye.
See ya.
Bye.
Well, guys, I hope that was somewhat compelling. I enjoyed having yet another conversation with Brandon and Alyssa. They are a couple smart young people, and they have really got some great perspectives. I'm proud that Canvas and the publishing business has helped them gain perspective, but they've also got their own unique perspectives on things. And so I'm going to continue to kick things around with them because they are both valuable components to our organization. And you know, I enjoy their perspective. I think that the lesson is certainly that things, they are a changing, and we all need to reach down and be vulnerable and be stronger and realize that there's no finish line and that the purpose of us even being around is to be productive and serve others. And that's a mindset that has to be embodied. It's certainly the mindset that occupies the most successful people. They simply want to be more productive. They are productive. They're curious. They serve others. And I think whether they're doing it for money or they're doing it simply for enrichment, serving anybody, profit, nonprofit, is the way to go. So there are some really good things that are coming about because of this confusing time, but there is no doubt about it that we are in a completely different age, and it's really an age of uncertainty. So my thanks to Brandon and Alyssa for spending some time. We will intermittently share a few of our internal conversations going forward, but until then, remember that Brushstrokes is brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. Visit www.conduit-inc.com, and we can serve all your custom content needs. So until our next episode, I wish you guys all the best. Be the buffalo, and have a great summer. Take care.